From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. An atmospheric river is passing over southeast Alaska, and the rain doesn't show any signs of letting up for Juneau residents this weekend. Showers will be especially heavy from Saturday night through Sunday morning, with 3 to 5 inches falling in that time. Kimberly Vaughn is with the National Weather Service in Juneau. She says there's a flood watch in effect for the area through Saturday night due to the heavy rain and increased snowmelt.
We're already seeing a lot of standing water on roadways and other surfaces due to poor drainages or blocked drainages from the cold weather and ice and snow that we've had so far this winter.
Excessive runoff could lead to high water levels in creeks and streams. The heavy rain on top of new snow in higher elevations is also raising concerns about possible avalanches. Avalanche danger is high today and is likely to increase, according to an advisory that's updated daily by Juneau Emergency Programs Manager Tom Matisse. Matisse says people should avoid the Flume Trail over the weekend and stay out of the gated areas above the Barrens neighborhood. Natural avalanches are likely this weekend, and human-caused slides are more than likely. This just in, a little before 3 p.m., Matisse reported on social media slides over Barrens Avenue and Thane Road, which is still open. He described both as good news, limiting the potential for bigger slides later. In local COVID-19 news, the city is giving away free home tests again after receiving a shipment of 26,000 kits on Wednesday evening. There's a limit of 2 kits per family. The test kits can be picked up at City Hall, all Juneau Public Libraries, the Juneau Public Health Center, and the Juneau Police Department. 4 free tests per address are also available by mail directly through the federal government. Health insurance plans are also covering the cost of these kits bought from retailers. The state reported the deaths of 2 Juneau residents from COVID-19 in recent months. A man in his 60s died in November, and a woman in her 80s died in December. State data show 208 new COVID-19 cases were reported among residents and visitors to Juneau on Wednesday and Thursday. 8 people are at Bartlett Regional Hospital with COVID-19. Hospital staffing remains strained, though the number of healthcare workers who are sick or quarantining is down to 16 today. It peaked at 26 on Monday. Statewide, over that same time period, 6,532 new cases were reported among state residents and visitors. 127 people who are positive for COVID-19 are hospitalized, including 5 people on ventilators. For most people, vaccines continue to be a safe and effective way to prevent severe cases of COVID-19. Public health officials estimate there are about 5,000 people in Juneau who are eligible but unvaccinated. Another 1,700 young children remain ineligible. For kids age 12 and up, and adults, there is a free vaccine clinic from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. tomorrow at Zantikahini Middle School. Booster shots will also be available. Appointments are available at juneau.org/vaccine or by calling 907-586-6000. Walk-ins are also welcome. Juneau's risk level remains at level 3, modified high. Masks are required in indoor public spaces and outdoors when it's crowded. 2 burst pipes caused flooding at an elementary school in Juneau, and it's going to take weeks to repair. In the meantime, staff and students are temporarily relocated to a church building. KTOO's Lindsay Berlini has this story.
When the Riverbend Elementary School flooded, large fans throughout the school were on to try and dry out the wet carpet and furniture. At the time, school staff thought maybe once everything was dry, they could go back to the building. But it's going to take a lot longer to repair the school. 3 to 4 weeks is the current estimate. During the repairs, Riverbend Elementary is temporarily relocated to a church in Auk Bay, Chapel by the Lake. The school's principal, Elizabeth Peisel Davis, takes me on a tour of the new space.
Smith Hall will be where we do lunch and in our kind of an indoor playtime because we don't have a playground anymore. And so we'll have board games and reading and drawing set up for them to do after they eat their lunch.
Peisel Davis says the school will still be able to provide free breakfast and lunch to everyone. Then Peisel Davis takes me to where the learning happens. Taped on the wall are some handwritten signs directing people where the classrooms are.
Children of our staff made all these very helpful signs for us so that we could know our way around.
When Peisel Davis first took a tour of the church, she knew this would be the best option. They were able to put the classrooms of each grade near each other, and the students and staff of the school would all be together in one place.
We were looking at, you know, putting a couple classrooms at different schools in the district, but it's just such a gift to be able to stay together.
The church was even okay with her turtles in the building.
But I haven't picked the perfect spot for them yet because my office is more of a mobile office at this point.
Staff are still trying to figure out solutions for other things they don't have in their new space, like their playground, library, phone system, and internet. But for the most part, Paisel Davis says things are working out and the new location will even bring some new learning experiences.
It just gives us such an opportunity to study an environment that's different than where our school is, and to do some compare and contrast. Like, our school is by a river. Now our school is by a lake. What's the same? What's different? How come?
Kindergarten teacher Lindsay Baranovic says the kids are excited to be back together again after over a month of being out of the classroom.
I think, you know, the beauty of coming back together, no matter the space, is that everyone wants to make it work. So the kids will have a learning curve for sure, but they have such desire to be together that I think it'll be just fine.
She says the teachers are trying to make the classrooms feel familiar to the students, but teachers also weren't able to bring everything from their old classrooms to the new building.
Many, many thousands of pounds of boxes left behind.
Baranovic says teachers had to prioritize what to bring, and each teacher's approach to it was different. Some teachers were going to mostly work with what they had at the church.
And then there were people like me who, I spent my 2 hours at Riverbend furiously packing everything I could.
For her classrooms, things for kids to play with was important because play is a big part of their day. For other grades, students' belongings and textbooks took priority. Baranovic says the first day back is going to feel a lot like the first day of school, especially for the younger kids. They'll be learning new routines and navigating around a new space.
You know, our focus is really going to be on kind of honoring the children's emotions as we go through this big change together. And just letting them know that we're all experiencing the same thing. I mean, this is new for all the teachers, too.
She says the younger kids, especially in the grade she teaches, kindergarten, haven't been able to settle in much at all. That change is all they know. Some kids maybe went to some preschool in person, did preschool virtually, or maybe didn't have any schooling before kindergarten. So before the school year started, she and the other kindergarten teacher decided to focus on social and emotional learning.
Because that facilitates problem solving, communication, provocations, self-directed learning, all of those pieces that are such key elements for students as they become learners in the real world as well.
The two teachers also decided to have a theme of collaboration for this school year before any of this even happened. And Baranovic says this experience has been an opportunity for them as teachers to test themselves on how to be good communicators and to think positively during a stressful time. In Juneau, I'm Lindsay Brolini.
A federal district court judge ruled that Governor Mike Dunleavy violated the First Amendment rights of an assistant attorney general, whom he fired the day he was sworn into office. The vindicated attorney is Libby Bacalar of Juneau.
The meat of the case was that I was terminated in violation of my free speech rights, and that's what the judge found, that I was fired improperly under the state and federal constitutions, and that constitutes unfair dealing on the part of the state. So I'm pretty happy with the ruling.
Judge John Sedgwick wrote that Bacalar was, by all accounts, a well-regarded attorney who won important cases for the state, but she drew attention for her off-duty writing. A liberal and often profane blog called One Hot Mess. She, like 250 other at-will employees, was asked to resign and to pen what she describes as a loyalty pledge if she wanted to stay on with the Dunleavy administration. She resigned, but wrote a letter explaining that she was forced into it. She filed a lawsuit against the state, Dunleavy, and his first chief of staff, Tuckerman Babcock. Babcock claimed that he fired Bacalar not because of her political views, but because her resignation letter was unprofessional. The judge said it was clear that Bacalar's political views and speech were factors in Babcock's decision. The judge ruled that Babcock and Dunleavy have qualified immunity and thus can't be held personally liable. Bacalar says she doesn't know what she'll seek in damages, but she doesn't want her old job back. She's now city attorney for Bethel. The governor's office referred questions about the decision to the Department of Law, which had no immediate statement. The Army Corps of Engineers is moving closer to dealing with a contaminated World War II-era military site long abandoned in the Aleutian Islands. At a meeting Wednesday night in Unalaska, representatives from the Army Corps of Engineers said they would send a contractor to Chernovsky Harbor in May. They aim to remove around 800 tons of soil and debris that was contaminated by diesel oil tanks during World War II. The cleanup site covers more than 1,200 acres in Chernovsky Harbor on the southwestern edge of Unalaska Island. Chernovsky Village was inhabited for thousands of years, but people stopped living there in the early 20th century. The Navy operated a port there from 1942 to 1945. Andy Sorum is the project manager directing the Corps' cleanup efforts at Chernovsky. He says they will ensure that any culturally and historically sensitive sites are protected.
We will have archaeological monitors on site while we are working. And if there are any significant finds, if there's any artifacts that are uncovered, we'll be able to identify those, curate them properly.
The harbor is only accessible by air or sea and receives very few visitors. The area is home to a large sheep ranch and only has one long-term resident who sells sheepskins and mutton in the city of Unalaska, 50 miles away. Sorum says the cleanup should not interfere with the working ranch and the livestock won't be affected. This is the Corps' third major cleanup in Chernovsky Harbor in the last decade. They've worked with the Kowalungan tribe of Unalaska, as well as regional and village corporations, to remediate contaminated land on the island since the 1980s. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Friday, January 21st, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.